Let's read several verses, and then we'll just jump in. And there came one of the seven angels, which had the seven vials, and talked with me, saying unto me, Come hither, I show unto thee the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast, full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet color, and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand, full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. And upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. Now, we'll stop reading there, and we'll just go as far as we can tonight. Now, Revelation chapter 17 is an indictment against the whore. Excuse me, I'm about to sneeze here. And of course, the whore here is a religious whore. Chapter 18 of the book of Revelation deals with a political Babylon, a political prostitute, political whore. But in chapter 17, we're dealing with a religious thing. And the objective of this harlot has been to seduce the kings of the earth and to shed the blood of the saints of Jesus Christ. It's a chapter that deals with persecution of God's people by this great harlot. And of course, the Bible being the self-interpreting book that it is, if you want to know what the whore is, look down in verse 18. And the woman which thou sawest is that great city which reigneth over the kings of the earth. And so the Bible tells you what this symbol of a woman is, this woman that it's referred to, this female, this harlot, this whore, is in reality a city, and this city rules over the kings of the earth. Now, you cannot think of any geopolitical city that reigns over the kings of the earth. Russia has its own ruler, America has its own ruler, Germany, France, England, the Netherlands, all those companies have their own rulers, and all those countries have their national sovereignty. They are all completely autonomous nations. There is no one nation that rules over all the other nations. So there's no king on the earth that rules all over all the other kings of the earth politically. So you know that this thing has to be a spiritual thing. Of course, you know that for a dozen other reasons in that chapter. But to make a long story short, chapter 17 deals with this whore. And if you know anything about your Old Testament, God was always chiding Israel because he said, and you went a-whoring after strange gods. And you seduced them on all the high places and under every green tree. And he's always talking about their lovers and all that. And what he's doing, he's talking about Israel committing spiritual whoredom. And that they have prostituted themselves and went a-whoring after strange gods. And so this reference to the great whore and those kind of things is simply the same thing we've been talking about in the Old Testament, where a false religion has captured the minds and hearts of people, and they've gone after it pell-mell. They have committed spiritual adultery. They turned their back on God, their Father, their Maker, and went and prostituted themselves to these strange gods. And that's the basis of chapter 17. Now, there are some specific things about this great harlot. And you need to take note there that this great whore, she's not just a whore, she is the great whore. And in verse 5, she's Mystery Babylon, the, great, the mother of harlots and abominations. So we're talking about the numero uno, the number one whore, the number one religious whore in the world. This whore is of such magnitude and such power that she has seduced or reigned over the kings, plural, of the earth. Now, there's only one organization on the face of this planet that has ever ruled over kings, plural. There's only one religious organization that has had power and authority over kings. Now, does anybody want to take a wild guess in the dark who that might be? It's the Roman Catholic Church. The Roman Catholic Church, during the Dark Ages, literally, not figuratively, not symbolically, the Roman Catholic Church literally ruled over the kings of the earth. And still does in a lot of places. In Spain, in Italy, in France, a lot of those Catholic countries, the Pope is more powerful and has more authority over the people than the legitimate ruler of that country does. But in the Dark Ages, the word of the Pope was absolute. Charlemagne, the Pope Leo, said that he crowned Charlemagne king. Crowned by God. Because the Pope thinks he is God. He's the vicar of Christ on earth. More than man, less than God, between God and man. And that's the position that the Pope takes. He is the person of God on the planet. And when he speaks, that's God speaking. When a Roman Catholic Pope issues a papal bull, or they call it a bull, it's a bulletin, when he speaks ex cathedra, that is, when the Pope sits in St. Peter's chair in St. Peter's Basilica and issues a bulletin or an utterance, it's supposed to be divine. They practice a doctrine called papal infallibility. That is, when the Pope speaks as the vicar of Christ, he cannot err. Whatever he says is as sacred and as holy as that book right there. That's papal infallibility. And the Pope said that he crowned Charlemagne king in the name of God. And, of course, in Europe, in the 8th, 9th, 10th, 13th, 15th, 16th century, the Pope ruled supreme. If the Pope didn't like it, wanted you put down, you were off the throne. I mean, they ruled with a rod of iron. Now, let me give you some information out of this chapter to confirm that the Roman Catholic Church is this great whore. Now, before I do that, a couple things ought to be said, kind of a preface. One, squeamish Christians, uninformed Christians, yellow Christians are always saying, "Well, preacher, I just don't think you ought to say anything about anybody else's religion." Well, who told you that? Why should we not say anything about their religion? If it's a false religion, if it preaches a lie, if it's being used of the devil, if it's sending people to hell in God's name, why should we not say anything? Amen? Now listen, I'm not trying to get anybody to hate Roman Catholics. There are some good people in the Roman Catholic Church. They're just lost, without God, and on their way to hell. Listen, the truth is, there's some real good heathen people. See? Just because a person's not a Christian doesn't mean that they're necessarily the worst people in the world. A lot of good people aren't saved. See? That's not the point at all. And so we're not trying to get you to hate individual Roman Catholics. Matter of fact, we wish you'd love them and win them to Jesus Christ. What we hate is their church and their system. Now, most people don't know anything about American history, and so we have lost sight of the fact that the reason America flourished was because people came here for religious liberty. We were fleeing from the Roman Catholic Church and the Church of England, the Episcopal Church. People came to America to settle, to get rid of a government that was subject to the church. Because power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And when the church runs the government, it's absolutely intolerant. And so the Roman Catholic Church in the Dark Ages killed 100 million Christians. The Waldensians, the Albigensians, the Pollards, the Huguenots, all those people were massacred by the thousands by the Roman Catholic Church. Then Bishop Loyola and all them fellas started the Inquisition in the 1500s, and they killed a few million more in the name of the Holy Mother Church. And the reason they did that is because they had the power to do that. That's the reason America is so big on separation of church and state. Because when the church is a state church, it is always a corrupt church. Now, this mother of harlots, this abomination that we're looking at here in chapter 16 or 17, we'll take the time to identify her beyond possibility of error. All right? Now, in verse 1, it said, saying unto me, come hither, I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters. Now, you learn that the great whore in verse 18 is that great city that ruleth over the kings of the earth. Now, if you look back in verse 15, and he said unto me, the waters which thou sawest where the whore sitteth are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. And so, from verse 15 and verse 18, you learn what the waters in verse 1 are and who the great whore is. Right? The great whore is a city that has political power, and the waters are multitudes of people from all different nations speaking all different languages. So this great whore has got worldwide influence. She has worldwide dominance. She is a monstrosity. Now, so he carried me away in the spirit, verse 3, into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast full of names of blasphemy, having 7 heads and 10 horns. Now, I think we've talked about the 7 heads and 10 horns in a previous chapter, so we're not going to spend a lot of time. You can go back and look at the notes on chapter 12 and get most of that. But look in verse 4. And the woman was arrayed. Now here's this woman, this harlot, this great whore. Here's what she's wearing. She's wearing purple and scarlet. And she is decked with gold and precious stones and pearls. And she has a golden cup in her hand. And this cup is full of abominations and the filthiness of her fornication. And upon her forehead was written a name, Mystery Babylon, the great mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. And so this great whore is attired in purple, scarlet, gold, and precious stones and pearls. And she got a golden cup in her hand. Does anybody know the colors of the Roman Catholic Church? Does anybody have any idea what the preoccupation of the Roman Catholic Church is? Does anybody know what the symbol of the Roman Catholic Church is? Well, let me help you. When the Pope comes out with all of his papal attire on, what does he wear? He wears purple and scarlet. Matter of fact, he actually wears 7 layers of clothes. I don't know how the old boy gets around in it, as feeble as most of them are. I guess that's just a real tribute to the stamina of a wop. I don't know. Y'all heard about the guy was looking for the Pope to come, you know, and he saw this airplane coming, and he said, the Pope is here. He said, the Pope is here. And they said, how do you know the Pope is here? He said, TWA, top wop arrives. Where was I at before I got sidetracked? All right, the attire of the Pope, the colors of the Roman Catholic Church are purple and scarlet. He wears 7 layers of clothes. Do you know what is woven into the fabric of the papal robe? Gold. That thing is 50% gold. It's woven into the fabric. Do you know what it's encrusted with? Precious stones. Have you ever seen a picture of the Pope with all these junk on? Man, there are rubies and diamonds and emeralds all in that thing. I mean, it's probably worth a couple of million bucks. Have you ever seen the crown that goes on his head? Do you ever ask yourself this? Why would a religious leader want to wear a crown if he weren't a king? The Pope wears three crowns. It's called a triple tiara. It has three layers to it. It's three crowns. He's a king. He rules. You know how he lives? He lives in a palace. The papal mansion. The palace of the Pope. You know why? Because he's a king. And he rules over the kings of the earth. Do you know why America didn't want John Fitzgerald Kennedy to become the first Catholic president? Because his allegiance to the Pope is stronger than his allegiance to the United States of America. And we were afraid to have a Catholic as a president because we were afraid if push come to shove that he would go with the Pope rather than his country. That's pretty scary, isn't it? You see, a Catholic, every Roman Catholic has two allegiances. He has one to his native land and one to his religious leader. And if you don't obey the Pope, you know where you go, don't you? You die and go to hell. They excommunicate you. They don't pray for you. And you pass out of this world and go to the devil. So the Pope is, the colors of the Roman Catholic Church are purple and scarlet. They are decked with gold and silver and precious stones. And do you know what the symbol of the Pope is? The Pope is the chief shepherd of the flock, by their own admission. You can pick up any book on Roman Catholicism, and the Pope is the chief shepherd. And so, back in 1825, Pope Leo had a medal made. And you know what's on that medal? On one side of that medal is a woman seated on a beast with a golden cup in her hand. And what it says under it in Latin is the world is her seat. I mean, she rules over the world. That's the official emblem of the Vatican. Just like you've seen the great seal of the United States, right? Well, that's the seal of the Vatican. Now, on the other side of that thing is the Pope with a shepherd's staff in his hand and a golden cup. Now, where is this city located? Look down here in verse 9. Here is the man that hath wisdom. If you know anything, if you got any brains, here is the man that hath wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sitteth. Now, the woman is a what? Verse 18, and the woman which thou sawest is that great city which reigneth over the kings of the earth. So, these seven heads are seven mountains where the woman sits. So, it's seven mountains where the city is located. Got it? Now, what city in the world sits on seven hills? Well, there ain't but one. So far as I know, as far as anybody knows, as far as anybody knows any book I ever read in my whole life, there's only one city in the world where the city is built on seven hills. That's Rome. The Roman Catholic Church in the city of Rome is the great whore. Buddy, that's a scary thing, because you know in America, Roman Catholicism is growing. One of the few places in the world where it is. American Catholicism is growing. You go over here in Rock Hill, they just spent a couple million dollars building a new church, and they're fixing to expand it. over here, right here in York, right here in York, the little Roman Catholic church right down the road over here, just built a brand new family life center and a whole bunch of stuff. Spent about $1 million. Where at? In the city of York. How big is this town? Where them cat lickers get $1 million? Now, the reason I know that is we put the heat and air conditioning in it. We had to get our share. In America, we came here as Protestants. Now, everybody except Baptists. Baptists have never been Protestants. A Protestant is a person who protested the excesses of the Roman Catholic Church. Baptists are not Protestants. We never protested anything. We were never a part of the Roman Catholic Church. If anybody's ever studied the history and the lineage of the Baptist Church, your lineage comes from the Huguenots and the Paulicans and the Lollards and down through that. You don't come from the Methodists and the Presbyterians and all the rest. We aren't Protestants. We never were part of that mess. But the Protestants came to America, the Puritans and that bunch, came over here for religious liberty to flee Roman Catholicism. Boy, first few years in American history, and there were some excesses. I mean, I'm not saying Protestants didn't always do it right. We messed up along the way. But this wasn't a place to be a Roman Catholic. Matter of fact, there were so few Roman Catholics in America in the first century of our history that most of them banded together in a place called Maryland. That's what Maryland is. That's Catholic country up there. And they called it that because they called it Maryland. We changed it to Maryland. But they called it Maryland because that's where all the Mary worshipers were. Okay? Because nobody trusted Roman Catholics. Because they had just come from a country where Roman Catholicism had kept them in poverty and superstition and ignorance and sickness and disease for 1,000 years. And they weren't giving any Roman Catholic any kind of a chance to get the upper hand religiously or politically. Which is smart. But it's not that way today. You know what we think? You know what Americans think? Americans think that the Roman Church of Rome is different today than it was then. Well, preacher, they've changed. They may have done some things in the past, but they're not like that anymore. You're just too dumb for words. They ain't changed a lick. You know what they did? They compromised because they're not in power. They compromised to keep from being wiped out. They compromised to keep from being exterminated. But the minute they get the opportunity, the minute they have the power, they're not going to put up with you Protestants for 5 seconds. They're going to get rid of you. You know why? They think you're all heretics. They have papal bulletins. That is, sacred edicts from the Pope equal to the authority of that book, that everybody who does not support and submit to the pontiff in Rome is a heretic and is to be not only excommunicated, but eliminated. The only reason you're not dead today is because the Roman Catholics don't have the power to get the job done. But we're so sweet and so nice and so gullible, and it's going to cost us one of these days. Now, look down there in verse 5. And upon her head was a name written, Mystery Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. Now, in that verse, there are 13 words and 65 letters. 65 is 5 times 13. Now, I don't have time to give you all that the Bible has on 13s. But boy, 13 is not a good number. And you've heard people say, well, 13's my lucky number. It wouldn't be mine. I'd change mine. If I thought 13 was my lucky number, I'd get my unlucky number, but it wouldn't stay 13. Let me look back here right quick, see if I left this page at home or not. Now, there's a special word for people who have an unnatural fear of 13. It's called tridiscophobia, and it's an unnatural fear. Where did I put that? An unnatural fear of 13. And I can't find it here. I've done such a good job. I don't know where I put it. Well, shucks. This note says that that's where it's at. And it's not there, though. Is it 414? That is not right. What did I do with it? It must be 14. That's got what it's got to be. A Scribble error. Ah, there it is. I knew I had it. I just forgot where. I have two of these to keep up with, you know. It's taxes my mind. Tridiscophobia. Unnatural fear of 13s. Well, there's a good reason for that. 90% of all the 13s in the Bible are bad. Not all, but 90%. You can't say axiomatically that every 13 or every reference to 13 in the Bible is bad, but you can say the preponderance of 13s are bad. And certainly in the great doctrinal places, they're bad. Now, when you go to Bible college, they teach you this thing called the law of first mention. That is, the first time a thing is said or the first time a word is used generally sets the tone or the tenor for how that thing is used the rest of the way through the Bible. It's called the principle of first mention. Now, the first mention of 13 is in Genesis 14:4. It said, and 12 years they served Chedorlaomer, and in the 13th year they rebelled. Now, so the first mention of a 13 in the Bible has to do with rebellion. Now, remember in 1776 when we fought the War of Independence? Right? Everybody remember that? Now, that's not what it was originally called. That's what you and I call it. Do you know what the British called it? They called it the War of Rebellion. Do you know who it was started by? 13 colonies. Who had a flag with 13 stripes and 13 stars. And on the top of it, it had a serpent that said, "Don't tread on me," 13 letters. It's fun, isn't it? You ever look at the back of your $1 bill? Got that pyramid on there? You know how many layers are in that pyramid? There are 13. Do you know how many olive branches or arrows are in the claws of that eagle? There are 13. You know how many letters are in E Pluribus Unum? 13. Matter of fact, to make a long story short, there are 26 13s on a $1 bill. Not counting series and date. Just built into the thing, there are 26. That's 2 times 13. Of course, that doesn't prove anything. It's just coincidence. This does. Nimrod is the 13th man from Adam. Do you know what Nimrod was? He was a rebel. That's found in 1 Chronicles chapter 1, verses 1 through 10. When the Antichrist becomes a man, he's a rebel. That's found in Revelation 13. Adonikim means Lord of Rebellion. He's the 13th man in the list in Ezra 2:13, and he's a rebel. In John 13:13, which has 13 words and 39 letters, 3 times 13, you know who it's talking about? Judas Iscariot. 13 letters in his name. That's a lot of 13s, isn't it? All of them associated with what? Rebellion. not godliness, not goodness, and certainly not luck. All them 13s are bad. In John 13, 26, 26 is 2 times 13, Satan enters Judas. In Revelation 16, 13, the unholy Trinity appears, Baal, Balaam, and Balak. Now, let me show you some 13s associated with the beast and the dragon and the false prophet. These verses are all have 13s in them, and these verses are all related to the beast. Mark 13:6, Revelation 2:13, Ezra 2:13, 2 Chronicles 9:13, 2 Kings 18:13, Acts 6:13, 1 Timothy 1:13, John 13:13, John 13:26, John 13:2, Revelation 13:6. All those have to do with the beast, who is a rebel against God Almighty. And I can give you the rest of them for the dragon and false prophet if you want them, but it gets kind of redundant after a while. I mean, you see the point. That number 13 is associated with the devil, who is the arch rebel in the universe. Galatians chapter 3 and verse 13, the Bible said, Christ redeems us from the curse of the law. Galatians 3:13 is associated with a curse. That curse is found in Malachi chapter, the last chapter of Malachi, in the 39th verse. 39 is 3 times